Hello, everyone. My name is Jeff Cross, and I'm the media director for Clean Facts, an ISSA media brand. I'm excited to share with you something new for the industry. Clean Facts has partnered with the IICRC and will produce a monthly program called Unscripted. These video episodes will feature what the IICRC is doing, what the industry needs to know about certification, standards, events, and more. And I believe we're even going to bring to you some technical tips, so you can look forward to that as well. And I know what you're wondering right now. This is new. What's the first episode all about? I don't know. It's unscripted. Well, I do know a little bit. It's about standards and what they mean to you, how you should embrace them, and a little bit of interesting history added to that as well. So let's go in and see who is lined up as the very first guest of Unscripted. What a surprise, Millie Washington. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us on the first episode of Unscripted. Millie, for those that don't know, is the standards director with the IICRC. So I imagine that's a part-time job.
Absolutely. Only 100 hours a week part-time, yes.
Well, there's a few more hours than that. You could work harder. No, we know you do a lot, and thank you for everything you do. But let's get started. This is all about IICRC, what's going on. And today it's about what you do and the standards. So tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do with IICRC, and how long you've been there, things like that. And you could talk about your family if you'd like to.
Why, thank you. How much time do you have, Jeff? No, I'm kidding. So I've been IICRC standards director for almost 13 years now. I started in 2011 in this position, and I still enjoy every day of the work that I do because I see the impact it makes in the industry. And that's what drives me. That's the motivation to keep going, to keep working on these different standards in the cleaning, restoration, and inspection industry. I do have a varied background, but in the last couple of decades, I have sort of settled into standards. I started with the American Industrial Hygiene Association, AIHA, as their standards person, and then transitioned to IICRC. And our standards have grown in the last, decade or so. And we've taken on so many more standards, and we'll, I'm sure, talk about that, today. But it's just exciting times. It's nice to see so many volunteers come together, experts in the industry, really, in my opinion, and stakeholders who are interested. You don't have to sort of sell it. There is an understanding of the value of standards, and so that understanding is what drives the participation and the success really of our standards. And so I'm happy to play a small part in that. It's really our volunteer members, our committees, and the entire industry that contributes towards the standards. I'm sort of master cat herder, something like that, but that's what I do.
Let's dig into that a little bit. I appreciate that information, and you've put a lot of personality into the standards. But I have to say this, Millie, when most think of IICRC, and I've talked to people about this, they think of the classes, they think of carpet cleaning class, water damage, mold remediation, many of them, they think of the certification part of it. But where do standards come into play? How many are there and how are they used? Can you talk about that?
I usually will say, well, where's the S in IICRC? There's no S, right? But the S is what everything else is standing on. At the S, the standards are the foundation that the rest of the institute is built on. So we write the standards in the different fields. For example, we're working on new standards for structural fire and for wildfire restoration. And so those, once they're published as American National Standards, will be the foundation that the rest of the fire certification, training, schools, instructors will be based on. And so I'd like to think of standards as a strong as the strong pillars that IICRC stands on. We do have many pillars, and the number of pillars are growing over 20 at this time. And we started off very humbly, with a couple of standards that were not ANSI accredited, not ANSI approved, but now all of our standards are developed as American national standards and published as ANSI standards. And so, it's crucial, pivotal to everything that IICRC does. And, it's sort of in some ways behind the scenes, the work that goes on, because the work that is done by our standards committees is really industry work. It's the industry representatives and stakeholders coming together and writing these standards. It's not IICRC. IICRC sort of sets the table for this brand party and invites everyone. And it's the folks who come to it that are writing the standards. It's not IICRC that dictates a single word that goes into our standards. But then when published, those standards create the foundation of everything else that the Institute does.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. Makes sense. But Millie, when I have many standards here from way back, and they're books. So some might say, well, they're guidebooks and people can just write them. There has to be a lot that goes into it. Can you talk about that?
How many days do you have, Jeff?
We just have a few minutes, so.
Okay, I'll do this super quick. So,
Okay.
as an ANSI accredited standards developer, IICRC has some very strict requirements to meet in order to maintain that accreditation, in order to maintain that ASD accreditation under the ANSI umbrella. What ANSI does is it supervises the process that is used by standards developers to develop and publish these standards. And I'll just touch on a couple of the basic tenets that are important that we follow. It's things like being open in our process, transparent, making sure that we provide notifications to all stakeholders, making sure that we have a public review process, which is very robust and rigorous. We get audited by ANSI on a regular basis. There's requirements for balance and lack of dominance on our committee. So there's a lot of, and I haven't even touched on everything. There's an appeals mechanism, for example. There are a lot of checks and balances that are in place with the ANSI process that ensures that no one person or specific interest in an industry can go rogue and write a standard and have that published, the system, the process does not allow for that. And so that's the difference, I think between saying, well, let's put together a guidance document. It's a book. We'll put it together. We'll publish it and we're done. Easy peasy. The standards are not quite like that. We have to jump through all of these hoops and we keep jumping through them in order to meet the ANSI requirements. And while it's painstaking, the outcome, as a result of doing all of these steps is really that's what stands on its own. What we are able to publish are credible documents that have had input from the industry, from stakeholders, and therefore, as a result, are just better. When we go through that public review process, we sometimes will receive hundreds, if not thousands, of comments. And yes, it's a little discouraging to put something together and have the entire industry kind of tear it apart. But the result of that is that the committees will look at their work and say, okay, maybe we can clarify that. Maybe we need to change that. Maybe that is an error, or maybe we didn't consider something. And as a result, our standards are just so much better through that process. And so, that's the difference. It isn't quick. It takes a little bit of time. We do have a requirement to revise and republish our standards on a 5-year cycle so that they are current, so that all the information in there is as accurate as possible. And so all of those things, those checks and balances, as I mentioned, is what makes a standard that is an American national standard leaps and bounds ahead of an independently published book or document.
And that's where the 100 hours comes in every week.
Oh goodness, yes. But teamwork, amazing teamwork from so many people over so many years for each of these standards, blood, sweat, and tears for sure.
I've worked on a few myself, but it's been a while. But I remember the process. And you're right. You create something you think is good and ready, and then the comments come in.
Yeah.
Part of the process.
Absolutely. And if you've written the standard, it's sort of your baby. So it's very easy to take it personally when a comment comes in saying that does not make sense or it's not right. But it is important for our communities to consider those comments and to really try to address them. And if we're accepting a comment, we're making a change to the standard. If we're not accepting a comment, we then have to provide a rationale, back it up as to why a comment is not being accepted. All in all, just difficult, but well worth it.
So you talked about how the standards are used and they drive things in the industry, but any unique ways that they're used that we haven't touched on?
Absolutely. These standards, once they are published and accepted in the industry as, for lack of a better term, really the Bible for whether it's cleaning, restoration, water damage, mold remediation, whether it's trauma and crime scene. Once they are accepted in the industry, they become the de facto standard, which means that if you don't follow it, you could be liable for the quality of work you have done or not accomplished. If it is outlined in the standard and it isn't completed in accordance with the standard, then there are consequences to that, and there are legal implications to it. There are insurance implications to it because, well, the standard says this, but you did not follow that, and so therefore, it's that's what is there in black and white for a company to either rely on and say, well, we followed the standard, and therefore, provide that justification, or the absolute opposite of that is to not have followed the standard, and therefore, for the insurance companies to deny coverage for work done by a remediator, restorer, cleaning company.
Yeah, that can be a scary thought right there, for sure.
Absolutely.
So we're coming to the end of our episode, but I thought you've done this a while. There has to be some good memories or some favorite memories. Maybe something during a meeting or whatever. It's your
There's
history, Millie. It's your history.
so many funny stories that I probably cannot share, so I won't, because it's just the little things that, when you've been doing this as long as you have, it's just little things that come to mind. You're like, oh my God, it's so hilarious, but I can't share it with anyone. I think for me, the highlight of this experience is the people that I work with, the committees that I work with, and the relationships that we build over the years that, that this work gets done. And I'll share an example of the S520 committee that has just kind of wrapped up their revision work, and we expect to have a 2024 version of the mold remediation standard. And so they had their last call yesterday, and when they finished, everyone just sort of lingered on. It was just this reluctance to leave. It was this, even though it's a multi-year project, no one wanted to leave. No one wanted to go anywhere because of the relationships that we built. And to me, I think that's the special part. In addition to having this project completed and having it published and saying, well, we're done, and how fantastic is that? It's the people. It's the people that drive the process and that make all of this enjoyable. And I'm just going to stick with that as my most enjoyable part of this whole industry and everything that we do here.
Then I recommend you write a book one day, a book about your entire experience, all the funny stories, maybe when you're done. I don't know.
Thank you. That's so kind, Jeff. There will be four people who will be interested in reading what
Oh,
is in
okay.
that.
So let's wrap it up. Those that are watching this, they want to get their own copies of the standards. Now I know we can go to IICRC's website. Now
Yes.
there's print and digital both.
Absolutely. We do have print and digital for all of our standards. We've been doing that for many, many years. But the thing that I want to highlight is the standard subscription. It gives you an annual subscription to absolutely everything, new, old, and anything new that we publish in the time that you have your subscription. And so if we have six new standards published in a year, you automatically get access to that. So that would be my recommendation. Is a digital, because so much easier to find stuff and to take it with you on your phone, on your tablet, and then B, to have access to absolutely everything. You don't have to carry stuff with you. So the subscription is what I would recommend, and that's where you get absolutely everything that we do.
Okay. And down below the video, I'll put a link into the standards page. Does that sound good?
Yes, please. Thank you.
All
Yes,
right.
lots of information there. And also just, from me, just a final thought in terms of participation. Participating in standards gives you a voice at the table. It gives you an opportunity to shape the industry. And so if you have an interest in any of the standards that we're working on, please let us know. We welcome input and we invite that always.